Let's go to Boston, and I just want to play a bit of a tune which we can associate with our guest, and it goes like this. Okay, Ambassador to the Vatican, Mayor of Boston, you restrained yourself from joining in there, or if you did, you were only humming away and singing to yourself. Ray Flynn, you're very welcome.
Great to be, how are you, my dear friend? I thought you were going to play the Quiet Man. That's the song you should have been playing with introducing me. I miss talking to you. You're my dear friend. You know that.
I know, but the Wild Colonial Boy is among your, it's in your repertoire. Why don't you start with, let's take your being, again, mayor of Boston and the scene in Boston at the time when you reigned as the mayor.
Well, it was a wonderful time. It was a challenging period of time, to be honest with you. I was on your program many times, and I would be on with my dearest friend, Paul O'Dwyer. And we, not only mayor of Boston, but we were involved in a lot of international issues as well. As you know, I'm a dock worker. Teddy Gleason was my dear friend. As a matter of fact, they're renaming the waterfront park here in Boston after me at some point in time. But I had a lot of connections as well with New York, as you well know, and particularly during the peace process. We had that very famous meeting in New York where Bill Clinton came and the candidates for president, and that was the start of the Irish peace process. The question I asked at the time, if you're elected president, would you appoint an envoy to Northern Ireland? And your dear friend John Deary was one of my trusted friends at the time.
And that
we asked that question, and that opened the door. That opened the door to the peace process.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you did mention our mutual friend John Deary, because it was his brainchild, indeed, to hold an Irish presidential forum. Many at the time told John, "Don't do this. They're not going to show." They're going to stay away from the Northern Ireland issue by a mile. It's a hot potato. Who do you think will show up?
Well, you described it perfectly, because you know what, Adrian, it was also the press. The American media was strongly opposed to Irish Americans like Geary and Flynn and Paul Dwyer and Morrison and all those folks there. And, you know, those folks had the courage to have that forum in New York City. And that's what really opened the door, you know, allowing an envoy, allowing Gerry Adams, in fact, to come to America, give him a visa, also appoint an envoy to Northern Ireland. That became George Mitchell. But it was unpopular. People don't remember. It wasn't the politicians that made things happen. It was the grassroots Irish people in cities like Boston, New York, San Francisco even. A lot of people don't remember that. But they put the political pressure on the politicians, and the politicians then followed the lead of just average Irish Americans, and that's how the peace process started in Northern Ireland. I'm very, very proud of the role that just average people played in bringing peace to Northern Ireland. I think it was one of the great great events in American history, in Irish history.
You know, you did mention your affiliation and your friendship with my Uncle Paul O'Dwyer. At the time, and at that particular time, there was very little encouragement coming from Ireland, the island of Ireland, in the sense that, you know, the Irish-American, you know, involvement in Northern Ireland in particular, for many, many people thought that, you know, that was more interference than anything else. Like, who are these people 3,000 miles away calling the shots for Northern Ireland? You will remember that many people in your own Boston, that you as mayor were saying, why don't you just take care of Boston? You know, we have enough problems here. You took over Boston at a time when they, you know, when there were a lot of very significant issues on the ground there, and there were some people who said, leave Northern Ireland, that's got nothing to do with us. And you were to the forefront there, you know, as again with Paul O'Dwyer and the John Deere's and many organizations across the United States who simply wanted to be very much a part of a movement, not just the hurdler on the ditch, not just the Monday morning quarterback. You know, it was all of this was, at the time, it was new. It was not, as you pointed out, it was not popular at all. As a matter of fact, it was downright unpopular. But again, it was a brave front. It was a brave undertaking. And again, you couldn't point to anything more than, again, your own question to then-candidate Bill Clinton, will you appoint an envoy to Northern Ireland? And that, of course, was probably one of the most significant questions that, you know, that history will record in Bill Clinton's response to that.
Absolutely. And, you know, the background of that a little bit is that before we had that forum, I think it was above Rosie O'Grady's, as I recall.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
And Paul O'Dwyer and I sat in a private room with Bill Clinton, Jerry Brown, who was the governor of California. And we went over the whole, Paul particularly, because he knew the history better than I did, that Paul was a man of enormous credibility and he was in compassion. And he went over that whole thing with Bill Clinton, the history of the oppression in Northern Ireland and Ireland and so forth. And Bill Clinton didn't really know the issue all that well before that meeting. And he went over to the Rosie O'Grady's, and the questions were asked by a panel of New Yorkers. And they asked the questions, different questions, and Bill Clinton sounded like he was, you know, Michael D. Higgins. You know, he knew the whole history. And you're right. That was, you know, but I got to tell you something. The thing is, it wasn't political. I want to stress that. But Irish people at that time weren't involved in politics per se. What they were committed to, it's like my family from Galway and Cork, what they are committed to was always social justice, economic justice. They were dock workers. They were laborers. They were average working people. But they knew people when they were down in their luck. They knew people that needed help, and they knew countries that faced depression. And so it was a cause. It wasn't a political movement per se, and we fought for that justice, and there it is. And it goes to show you, though, if people work hard enough and are determined, like the Irish people are, and are not going to back down to anything, particularly any form of injustice, just like I saw in South Africa with Nelson Mandela and other places across the world, you'll see justice prevail. And I'm so pleased that the average people in New York and Boston and Chicago and Philadelphia and San Francisco really ought to be the people who get the Nobel Peace Prize, because they're the ones that made a difference in the world.
Ambassador, if you put on your ambassador's hat there for a moment, being assigned as the U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, even for Ray Flynn, that must have been the highlight of your career. And what was your initial reaction when you got that assignment? How did you react to that?
Well, the first time I got a call from the White House, the newly appointed president, elected president, I should say, I thought it was going to be, and it even said this in the newspaper, that I was going to be elected Secretary of Labor. And then I said, okay, that's fine. That's a great honor for the United States, for me. My father was a union dock worker. I'm a lifetime member of the International Longshoremen's Association. My wife's father from Galway was a union member, and the whole family. And so being Secretary of Labor would have been a great honor. However, then the president himself calls me back a couple of days later and he says, you know, a lot of these issues that we deal with in America have a moral component, and we need that moral voice behind it. You know John Paul II as well as any American does. I first met him in 1969 in Boston, and I met him in 1975, and we corresponded in Boston back and forth. So I had that relationship with him already. He says, you're about the only one that I know really has a personal, not just professional, personal relationship with the Pope. Would you accept this position because as ambassador to the Vatican? Because we need the Vatican, we need the Catholic Church, and you're the connection for that. Would you take it? And I says, of course I would. I says, because I'll do whatever is best for my country and for the people. And it was one of the greatest moves, decisions that I ever made. I love being mayor of Boston, but being United States ambassador, I had the opportunity to travel to Poland, to Russia, to South Africa, to Rwanda during the genocide, to Haiti during the Troubles, the Civil War, to Bosnia-Herzegovina during the terrible Civil War. So I really got to see more things than most people in the world ever imagined or dreamed about. And I did it with the support of the president, and I did it with the enthusiastic support of the Pope John Paul II. And those friendships and those experiences are something that, you know, I'll probably end up telling my grandchildren and whoever will listen to me for the rest of my life, that they were just extraordinary moments in time in world history.
If I don't bring it up, nobody else will. I want to brag about my own connection with the Vatican. This friend of mine would come into our studio, this Boston mayor, Ray Flynn, and he would cop our CDs without even the slightest sign of any embarrassment. And he would go out with a load of our CDs, and he would tell us that these were going to the Vatican. These were going there, and that he was going to, in fact, play a couple of them for the Pope. So, you know, our collection of CDs were, you know, they were disappearing, and who could take issue with the fact that, hey, if these are going to go to the Vatican, I mean, that's it. And I loved your own presentation of saying, I want to borrow these. I don't know whatever happened to them, but I don't know.
Well, since you brought it up, and you shouldn't have brought it up, because you went to the men's room, and when you came back, you discovered that there were many CDs missing, but they all went over to the Vatican, and we had a number of great events that those CDs were played, including one of the most enthusiastic listeners was Pope John Paul II. We had more fun on St. Patrick's Day and other days, special days. One day, actually, we did it. We played some of your CDs from your radio station on the Pope's birthday. Absolutely on the Pope's birthday. Yes, he had some Polish songs, but he also had some Irish songs in there too.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind me admitting that, you remember you used to strike up the keyboard?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then, and I would be singing with you on the radio. God almighty. I attribute your popularity, by the way, because the best Irish-American radio show in the country, to my appearances, singing with you on the radio.
You listen, you don't have to justify at this point, you know, the depleting our CD collection if they wound up in Rome. But let's get on to a topic many people reaction to our current Pope Francis in establishing a commission to study allowing women to serve as deacons in the Roman Catholic Church. That indeed, it should have gotten more, as we see it, general U.S. media coverage, and it hasn't. But it is such a monumental change for the Catholic Church that I would like to get your read on it.
You know, to understand the background of that whole thing, this is Pope Francis announced, or he stated to a group of 900 women religious nuns at the Vatican the other day, he wanted to create a commission to study allowing women to serve as deacons in the Catholic Church. Now, that's a significant thing, very significant. They used to have women deacons years and years ago, but nothing in the last couple of hundred years, I guess. But you know what's really significant about that? And it wasn't part of the official ceremony at the Vatican. It wasn't part of the particular audience. He invited questions from the people, as any good public figures do. They just don't make speeches. They invite input from the audience. And this is what Francis does. I've known Pope Francis for a long time, and this is what he did. He reserved the forum took 90 minutes, and he asked the question, and the nuns get up and say, what about a more meaningful role, significant role and responsibilities for women in the church? And then that led to this whole discussion. And you are absolutely right why the American media has not picked up on that. Now, if there was something negative that came out of the Vatican or something negative about priests and nuns and the church and all that, we'd certainly see that in the front pages of the New York Times and other newspapers. But this one, very little attention. But this is significant because, you know what, I would travel to this place in Africa. It's called Rakai. And there's a priest that you know, Angus Finucane. He's since passed away, Gus Finucane.
Yes, indeed.
And I saw him.
Founder of Concern,
Yeah, Concern, that's right. I worked with him when I was ambassador. And I saw the way they treated and the way they worked in this clinic with children and women with AIDS that were dying. Many of these Irish nuns died. I mean, what heroes. You know, and I just can't imagine why they're not really saints or canonized or Pulitzer Prize winners. And so, you know, you have to say, boy, if these nuns, these Irish nuns could be so heroic, why is it that they can't play a more equal role in the Catholic Church, delivering homilies or presiding at weddings or funerals or confirmations or whatever it is, you know? And so that's what the Pope, I think, sees himself. He recognizes the great potential, the great role of women in the Catholic Church as religious. So they're going to have this study, and they're going to come back with recommendations, and I think you'll find that there will be meaningful changes made, and I think they're all, like Pope Francis always says, who am I to judge? Well, all you have to do is look at the work of the women in the religious, and you don't have to judge. You just have to look with your own eyes. And you can say, boy, these people are really doing a great job, not only for the Catholic Church, but for society as a whole.
You know, again, referring to American media you know, the newspaper of record did say in a very small article column that it was basically questioning why there's a need for a commission to study allowing women to serve as deacons in the Catholic Church. Doesn't everybody know that that would be, you know, that's something that Pope Francis could have done with the click of a finger, so to speak. The commission itself, first of all, I'm sure you'd be able to explain to us that nothing happens at the Vatican without commission, without involving again, and nobody, as you say yourself, better than Pope Francis, he's not a dictator. He again is a listener, and this commission, which again is now underway, this is not just one of those commissions that will go on for years and years. Give us your estimate, if you will, on you know how rapidly this can happen.
Well, it a lot depends on the voice and the input of Catholics throughout the world, not just women, not just nuns, but Catholics expressing their point of view to their bishops, to their cardinals. A lot of these people are good people, but they need to be encouraged. They're people in public positions. They need public support. Look, let me give you one example. When I was elected mayor, blacks did not live in most public housing units in Boston. Now, if I just said, okay, this is Ray Flynn speaking, blacks are going to be able to live anywhere they want, there'd be some protest. But what I did was I created a commission of good people, white and black, men and women, Catholics, non-Catholics, Jewish people, and they all came back and they met three or four times over the course of 6 or 7 months, and they came back and they say they backed Mayor Flynn for integrating public housing. I only say that because sometimes it takes a groundswell of good people getting involved, expressing their point to mobilize public support, like we did in Northern Ireland. And I think that's what Pope Francis is doing. This commission will have some influence in reaching out to people. People will have some input in terms of expressing themselves. And I hope what results in that is a responsible process where women have a more responsibility, a more meaningful role in the Catholic Church. I think that's the future of the Catholic Church in the world.
Again, friend, Ray Flynn, and somebody who, as I say, the CDs that you may not have heard in this program wound up in the Vatican, and we have no reason to believe that Ambassador Ray Flynn would have been, you know, so corny as to bring them all home to Boston again. But we've never asked the question. I'm not going to ask it now. Ray Flynn, again, thank you for your input, and you're always welcome.
Let me go off the air by saying, there was a wild colonial boy, Ray Flynn was his name.
Okay, all right. We know where that's
going. I love you guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you. All right. End of the program, friends.
Boy,
thank you for listening. God bless.
Was his name. He was born and raised in Ireland in a place called Castlemaine. He was his father's only son, his mother's pride and joy, and dearly did his parents love their wild colonial boy. At the early age of 16 years, he left his native home, and to Australia's sunny shore he was inclined to roam. He robbed the rich, he helped the poor, he shot James McAvoy. A terror to Australia was the wild colonial boy.